You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tis the season for festive football, and the best way to watch it? Down at your local Green King Sports Pub, of course. After all, Christmas is a time to catch up with friends, old and new. So get the team to your local for refreshing pints, delicious food, and live action of every Christmas cracker. Every fixture from TNT, Sky and Amazon is live at Green King Sport. That means wall-to-wall action on our huge HD screens. Head to your local Green King and watch every winning goal, top bins volley and dodgy VAR decision in an atmosphere worth sharing. Download the Green King Sport app and you'll receive 10% off drinks every single time there's sport on the telly.
To a very special Christmas Spurs show live at Dingwalls in London. Thank you for joining us here in the room. Thank you for listening at home. Please firstly welcome my co-host, Mr. Theo Delaney.
Good evening.
And delighted to have these two guests with us tonight. Firstly, a player that we've been trying to get on the show for a while now. Delighted we managed to get hold of him. Over 370 appearances for Spurs, which puts him in the top 20 players with the most appearances in the lily white shirt. And a lot of people know that, but it's very, very true. Incredible. FA Cup winner and still one of the last players to lift the FA Cup. Please welcome to the stage, Mr. Paul Allen. And secondly, we're very lucky to have him on the show. I don't know how years ago it was when he had his book came out. Five? Six? I think it's probably longer than that now. But there we go. An incredible 84 goals in 135 games, still holds the club record for most goals in one season, 49 in just 54 matches. Incredible stats. PFA and Football Writers Player of the Year 1987. Please welcome Mr. Clive Allen. Thank you very much for joining us, coming out on a cold Monday night.
It's a pleasure.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Nice to be here.
Nice for you to join us. Paul, we'll start with you. You both grew up as Spurs fans. Is that correct? Because a lot of West Ham mates wouldn't know he's West Ham. What's the real story?
No, my first team I went to watch as a young boy, it was 1968. It was West Ham versus QPR. Clive's dad was playing for QPR that day. And I can remember my dad taking me. So I became a QPR fan in a predominantly West Ham area. But my affiliation for Spurs has always been there. My dad was the eldest of three brothers. So he was obviously very proud of Clive's dad, Les, and what he achieved at Spurs. So it was kind of indoctrinated into me from a very young age, that double winning team and the players of that era. His favourite player, apart from Les, was Dave McKay. That was his all-time hero. Mm.
The double winning side, despite your age, you were there, weren't you?
I was there, yeah. Yeah, so I was born on May the 20th, 1961. So if you know your history, I was 2 weeks before I was in my mum's tum at Wembley. So when I say it's in my blood, it's in my blood. And guess what? I popped out at 3 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon. destined to play football one day. But yeah, born into a footballing family. Like Paul, I grew up, my grandfather taking me to Queen's Park Rangers to watch my dad play, and then was player manager. And we talked about the great Terry Venables. Mm-hmm. Obviously, there's a family connection there. My dad actually signed Terry Venables from Tottenham to Queen's Park Rangers, made him captain of QPR. So I knew Terry from the age of six, but obviously later on in life, I had the great pleasure of playing for him three times.
Yeah.
Firstly at Crystal Palace, and then back at Queen's Park Rangers, and then finally at Spurs before I left, just as Terry arrived and came back from Spain to manage Tottenham. So yeah, QPR was my first club. I grew up there. It was like a second home to me. But obviously in 1984, when I got that phone call from Peter Shreeves, the then manager, just taken over from Keith Birkinshaw. And Shreeves' pitch was, "Hello, Clivey. Who is it? It's Peter," he said. We've agreed a fee with Queen's Park Rangers. I think you know where the ground is, and I'll see you in the morning." And the rest is history.
Amazing. Going back first, I'm sure everyone in the room will remember, Paul, you were a kind of poster boy teen idol at West Ham. You were very young at West Ham. I know a lot of girls who are probably some boys as well who had you up on the wall at 17. I mean, that's incredible to break into that team. And obviously, we've got to talk about, you know, because you beat the Woolwich Wanderers that day. We've got to talk very briefly, although it's a Spurs show, about being 17, I think it's been broken now, the youngest player. Yeah. Someone broke it recently, didn't they?
Yeah, it was Curtis Weston came on as sub for Millwall against Manchester United.
Wow.
My mum's still trying to hold on to the record because it was played in Cardiff.
Ah, yes.
And he came on a sub. I keep trying to say to her, just let it go. But
Did you take it in your stride because you're so young and you don't know anything else to sort of be thrust into the sort of national consciousness at such an early age?
Yeah, most people think that I just played in the cup final. That was my only appearance. I mean, I broke into the team in September. So that was my home debut. Kept in the side. I had there was one or two games where I got left out. But played in every cup game that's leading up to the final. So I think I'd have been disappointed if I didn't start, if I wasn't involved. But I think the thing that stands out for me is that I remember on the Friday, on the Thursday in the national newspaper, it said that I would be, if I played, which it looked like I possibly could, I'd be the youngest player to appear in a cup final. But the manager never said anything to me. So I think I followed the manager around the training ground all Thursday, hoping that he might say something to me, but he never did. On the Friday, he announced the team. And I remember when I got home, my dad said, "What's the team?" And I could only tell him 1 to 7. I was number 7.
Yeah, because you stopped listening after that.
I switched off completely after that.
Yeah.
And to think that when I look back now, that I was the year before playing at Chapel Heath, or that season actually in the youth team in the reserves, to think that I'll be playing in a cup final. My first year as a professional, and I was only a year out of school. So it was like somebody going on a Spurs tour. I was just, there I was in the inner sanctum of Wembley, about to play in a cup final. I was just more excited than nervous about the day.
And I've got to tell you this most incredible fact that I didn't realise until about 2 or 3 years ago. We were at an FA Youth Cup tie at White Hart Lane, the old White Hart Lane,
And Harry Winks walked into the box, having just come out of the youth team, moving his way into the first team, and just asked us, really nice young lad, talking to us, said to us, "How? What were your experiences of the FA Youth Cup?" So we were chatting away, and I didn't even realise that this man here won the FA Cup a year before he won the FA Youth Cup, right? No one, I tell you, no one has ever done that.
Wow.
And no one will ever do that again.
Amazing. That is amazing.
But Clive, but you also started out very young, making your debut as well, both of you.
Yeah, I think I say football was a way of life. It was. I think the way we were brought to, I always say I was a professional at 6 years of age. When I first started kicking a football around, I think the information, the talk amongst the family, uncles, cousins, was of a professional nature, if that's the right description. Mm-hmm. So I grew up being a young professional. When I signed my first professional contract at 17 at Queen's Park Rangers. It was just what I did. It was a way of life, as I say. And I don't think I ever felt overawed. I was always excited and determined to go through the stages. And, yeah, I was very fortunate that I was given my debut at 17 Queen's Park Rangers and stayed in the side from then, really. So, yeah, I always felt at home. It was what I was destined to do.
I mean, were there any other families like that you were aware of? Because it really was an extraordinary family. To grow up in a family that was so steeped in professional football, football of the highest level.
I think at that time, the Clarks, wasn't it? The
Clark family.
The Clark family.
So that was Alan and Wayne.
Alan White. Wayne was the same age as me. I played with Wayne at Manchester City. He played for Everton and came to Manchester City to play. I played with him at England schoolboy level at 14 years of age.
Right.
And then professionally, we came together later on in our careers. Obviously, Alan was a famous centre forward, an uncle of his who played for Leeds. And Frank as well, Frank Clark.
Right.
The Notts Forest connection, obviously, that you were talking about earlier. Then Frank was a staff at Brian Clough and Nottingham Forest. So the Clarks probably was as close to us. But not as many, because you go
the Charltons, William Morgan, who's obviously at Tottenham, and the Morgan... The
Morgan twins, Ian and Roger.
The twins. Yeah. But I can't think of them just uncles and dads.
Yeah, we were working it out earlier. Actually, is it eight, Alan?
Yeah, we got the quiz question wrong, by the way.
Yes, yeah, we were sitting up the back when that
it's
came
eight,
out.
Eight, we're going to object because... family.
Yeah, Stuart's inquiry.
My son played Oliver. Absolutely, well done. He played for Birmingham City as a professional, Barnet and Stevenage, and then Martin's son George played for Martin at Gillingham as a professional. So, yeah, there's actually eight Allens that played professionally.
I mean, there can't be a family closer to that. I wouldn't have thought. No,
I think that takes some beating. You know,
yeah, that's going to take some beating. Yeah, and then any more in the pipeline? As it were.
Well, I have a grandson who's 9 and he's playing.
Does he look good?
I don't want to put him under any
imagine
pressure.
That family, you've got to be really good before they say
pressure.
You're good.
That's pressure now. Yeah. Paul, I mean, was it a shock? I mean, again, we talked about your obviously the connection was a... Was it a bit of a shock? It was certainly a shock to West Ham fans. I remember at the time, when you moved across London to come to Tottenham. That was a big move, because we've always said on the show for years that the West Ham-Tottenham rivalry has always been more their rivalry than us. It's their cup final, etc., literally in your case. Yeah. But it was a big, big move in football when you came to Tottenham.
Yeah, I was in the fifth year of my contract, so my contract was about to expire. There was initial conversations about extending it, but it never materialised. And I felt, when it came to the December time, that I wanted to let my contract expire. I've been at the club since I was 14. I wanted to test myself somewhere else. And then I think we played... we obviously played Spurs Boxing Day. We drew 2-2. And then I heard... Or there was rumours in the media that Bill Nicholson had watched me and Spurs were interested. So I think once I knew that, it was a case of I was going to let my contract expire. At the end of that season, funny enough, I went and met Kenny Dalglish and nearly signed for Liverpool, but as soon as I came to Spurs, drove into the car park. I didn't want to play anywhere else. This was the team for me. I think the connection with Clive, I wanted to link up with Clive. And just our connection to the club, it was... And the bus to Bill Nicholson as I walked in, it was all... Yeah, as soon as I walked in, I thought, no, this is where I want to play my football. And I've got to say, not just saying it, but to this day, it's the best decision I ever made. I loved it there. Loved playing for Spurs.
And you two were close as cousins, because some cousins see a lot of each other, some don't. But you were quite close as cousins when you were young?
Well, going back all the way to that FA Cup final, on the Friday before the game on the Saturday, I bought my first VCR video recorder. So many older ones.
For younger listeners.
Right? And we played back. I taped it. I practiced all the way to midnight Friday to make sure that I taped the whole day on the Saturday. And the following week afterwards, we watched it back, because obviously Paul's involved. He wouldn't have seen it. We watched back all the build-up, all the celebrations and the game many times, didn't we?
I remember that vividly,
Yeah, so we were close. We were close as cousins.
Right. So
as a family, we were close as well.
Yeah. So for you to go and play with your cousin was extra special. You don't often get a chance to do that.
An opportunity for us to, like a third member of one family, like with
Clive
and
Les,
to play for Spurs. What an opportunity. And it was good. Good to link up.
And you played a lot of games together, right?
Yeah, we did. Yeah,
particularly 87. That was the season, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Did you join the season before?
I joined in 84, just after we won the UEFA Cup.
And it was Everton scored twice in your debut.
My debut was at Goodison, yeah.
That's
Goodison
right.
was a good ground for me. And you're right, John Chidozie, who signed the same day as me, we made our debuts at Goodison. And, got off to a great start. Scored a couple of goals my first game for Spurs. Mm. And, as I say, it just... was seamless.
But then you got that really bad injury, didn't you? Which was really set you back.
Which was in the November that season, which was it was a real blow. And I was out for 1 year, but came back after being out a year, a couple of operations, and was just determined to re-establish myself more than anything. And obviously David Pleat had taken over, and he decided that he wanted the team to play in the way that he felt was the Spurs way, and the players he had, he devised a system that worked perfectly for us.
And it's something that we remember so fondly. And as I think of it, I've often said that, I don't know if I'm right, but it seemed to me like the first big English team to play with one up front and a five-man midfield. But was that an act of genius on David Pleat's part, or did it just evolve because of the personnel?
I think he devised a system that suited the personnel. I thought it was an amazingly brave decision by him. And basically, I think he looked at Glenn Hoddle and just felt that with a free role, he could be one of the greatest players ever for Spurs, which worked perfectly for the team as well.
Yeah.
And when you think if Pep went back to a 4-4-2, everybody would think he's a genius.
Yeah,
but David Pleat played with a five at that time. Yeah. We overloaded the midfield.
Yeah,
played short, intricate passes.
Yeah.
We basically blew teams away. They didn't know how to deal with it.
Yeah.
Suited the players we had. They said I played up on my own. I didn't. I didn't play up.
There were always people around. I was Waddle and Hoddle.
I was the one player furthest forward.
Right,
but Paul on the right, Chrissy on the left, Chrissy Waddle. Glenn Hoddle just behind, Ozzy in there, and the way that we passed and moved the ball through the lines, this is incredible, isn't it? All those years ago, we were perhaps doing what teams are doing now.
You were doing things that they hadn't even invented the terminology for, like you say, through the lines. People never used phrases like that, really, did
Absolutely.
They?
Absolutely, and I think you have to give David Pleat extraordinary credit for that.
Yeah.
Even more so in the fact that the first time that he played that system, Clive's mentioned it before, there was some experienced players in the team that didn't actually think it was going to work.
Right.
Ray Clements, I think, was quite vocal that they played that system with Liverpool. It hadn't worked for them.
Right.
We played Oxford away with that system. We were 2-0 down. Mm-hmm. And I remember him coming in and he was still very, very strong in his... kind of in his mind. This is the way that I want to play. Mm. This is the style of football that I want to play. Let's be patient. And we went, I think we won 4-2.
Yeah. We won 4-2. We won 13 games on the bounce.
That could have been a pivotal moment.
He could have come in quite easily at half time and changed it.
Yeah.
But he stuck with it. He was very brave, I thought.
Yeah.
And I see a lot of similarities to the team today in respect of the way we played. I always felt that the way I would describe that team is we went into every game thinking we'd outscore the opposition. Yeah. You know, we'd win 3-2 or we'd win 5-4.
Yeah.
We would concede goals, but the nature of the way the team was going to play was to create chances and score goals, and that's what we did. It was just a fantastic experience to play in that team.
And when we watched that football, as you say, there are so many similarities with today. For us to watch it was so exhilarating, and it also makes you feel great about your club and proud. So it's enormous fun. It's what, you know, you're getting real value for money when you turn up every week and you watch that. Is it like that to play in? Is it fun to play in? More fun than...
Absolutely. You wanted to play in every game. You're looking forward to every game. And I would say in the career that I had and all the games that I played, the best club game that I ever played in was Boxing Day 86 against West Ham, 11 o'clock kickoff. We won 4-0 and we should have won 10. It was unbelievable the football we played, and I'm playing in the game and just couldn't quite believe how we wasn't winning by 10, and we literally blew West Ham away. We had lots of chances, should have won more than the 4 that we did, but I think that was the best example of that team at its best that day.
It's funny, cause that was my next question. What was that game? But you've already answered it. As with Spurs, though, you know, that season of frustrations, sorry to bring it up, but still raw. Littlewoods, I think they call it, the Littlewoods Cup, those two legs, which I'm sure most of us were both all go through. Three games, there was the replay.
Three games, yeah. We were never behind until the third minute of the third game. We were in front over the three games. And I always remember our best player that night got injured and went off. And everyone says, who was that from Spurs? It wasn't from Spurs. It was Charlie Nicholas. He was our best player that night. He rolled his ankle. He went off. Ian Allenson come on and with his first touch equalised.
Yeah.
And then 93rd minute, David Rocastle scored. Yeah. Late David Rocastle scored the winner. And as I'm walking off, I was presented with two bottles of champagne. And with a glum face, and the guy's trying to take a picture of me. He says, why are you not smiling? Why am I not smiling?
Mm.
He said, you've just broken the record for the League Cup. You've scored the most goals in a season in the League Cup, which still hold that record today. Yeah. And walked into that Spurs dressing room with everybody, literally everybody was crying. We could not believe what had just happened.
Mm.
Yeah, that was one of the most devastating games, I think. Obviously, the cup final was to come. But at that point, and the way that those three games unfolded, that was a real blow.
But us, Willie Morgan's here tonight. Poor old Willie was given the script, announcing tickets for the final.
Yeah.
And we all sat there half-time.
Why'd you do it? Why did you do it?
We're not all saying it's your fault, Willie, but it was your fault.
No, I am. I'm saying it's his fault. There we are. And we all sat there going, oh no, why is that announcement come?
Typical. Were you aware of that on the night that had happened?
No.
All right, it's not your fault then.
In the event of succeeding.
Oh, was that the line? The event of us succeeding.
All right, don't lose your temper, Willie.
But,
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
But let's go over that League Cup. Obviously, in the FA Cup, as you mentioned, we were really strong. And again, talk about semi-finals. You scored in the semi-final. That was an bizarre games we've watched as Tottenham fans. That game against Watford, Villa Park, where Plumley was their goalie?
Yeah.
Eddie Plumley's son.
Yeah. Plumley.
The club secretary's son. That's right.
Who was there? So Sherwood was injured.
Yeah.
And then, I don't remember their second goal, their second goalie was. Coaten was there then.
Yeah. Tony Coaten,
so both their goalies out. I remember it was announced that morning that he runs a wine bar. And it was, I mean, but we were sensational that day as well. You scored great.
Before he says anything, and I know he scored, and I scored, but it was just deflected, but I scored, I claimed it. We went into the dressing room 3-0 up at half time, and he was running around the dressing room. He was dancing.
I was on my way to
Wembley. I can't believe it. We're 3-0 up in a semi final. And Glenn Hoddle, Hod turned to him and said, Ollie, calm down. We haven't won it yet. We went out. Steve Hodge scored a fourth. And the game was over. We did literally blow them away. One of, not the easiest semi-final victories, but one of them in terms of the way that the game unfolded for us. Yeah.
Where did your nickname come from, Ollie, out of interest?
I was just saying earlier, so when I was 15, 16 at West Ham, and I was an apprentice as it was then, so you had to get into the showers very quickly because you had to come back, eat, and then you had to do your duties. So we had a goalkeeper, I still remember his name, Gary Moseley. So it was after Laurel and Hardy. So he decided to call me, my hair was sticking up and he kept calling me Ollie. And someone said to him, no, you've got that all wrong. Yeah. That's Dan Laurel, that's not Ollie. Yeah. And it stuck with me for, like 50 years later, I'm still called Ollie. Yeah.
And he's still today.
I was just saying that big transition from the dressing room in the youth team into the first team, but I got a warm welcome because they all called me Ollie, but I actually think they all thought my name was Ollie because they didn't really know me. Yeah.
It's a game that I've never watched back, that final. What do you think, in hindsight, went wrong that day? Because obviously we're big favourites. Clive got the early goal.
Looking back now, and I think personally that we did things that it changed in terms of the dynamics of what we did from Monday to Friday. I don't know if Clive agrees, and I'm not suggesting that's why we lost, because Coventry played really well on the day. But I think for us personally that we did, we just changed our training schedule, the timings. It was just a little bit different, and perhaps. Players being creatures of habits.
He's being very kind.
On the Friday,
we stayed at the old training ground at Chesant on the Friday, which again, normally you'd go away for the week and prepare for this special game. And we trained, I remember training late on the Friday afternoon, not the normal 10 o'clock start, later in the afternoon. We arrived at Chesant, obviously, we're playing in the cup final the following day. And Trevor Hartley was a coach who would normally take the warm-ups. We're out onto the training field. And the manager runs out. This is no disrespect to David Pleat. He runs out with a rugby shirt on and the collar turned up and starts taking the warm-up, which he'd not done all season, had he?
No.
And I remember the lads looking around thinking, what the fucking hell is he doing? So David takes us jogging down the touchline, dancing, clapping his hands. We're going to do a Brazilian warm-up. And the boys are looking at one another thinking, weren't they?
Yeah.
Has he gone mad?
Yeah.
It's like, this is crazy. So it was completely different to what we would have normally done.
Do you think he must have thought to himself, I'm going to do something different here for the
absolutely,
lads?
Absolutely,
yeah. Because I think that will make... And it's one of those things, if you'd won, you'd be saying, now, it was brilliant. He did this different thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Just relaxed us.
Yeah.
We played different.
Yeah, and I'm not suggesting that's why we lost the game, but I think the build-up...
We are. It's all your fault, Mr. Pleat.
Yeah. I'll leave it there then, yeah.
But football is a creature of habit. You do certain things. I think we've been on the show a few times. I think you stayed somewhere different to where you normally stay or didn't stay somewhere.
He said that
I shouldn't have done that. That routine. He did mention on the show that the routine you're used to...
But
he changed it and that was a mistake.
But sometimes they say that breaking the routine is a good thing before a big game, because you're under so much pressure and everything, get the minds off it. When was it he told us about Juan de Ramos when we were on the League Cup, and he encouraged them all to go off and have a right laugh and just let their hair down in advance of the... Which is the last thing he would normally do.
Thing one day would have done.
Yeah, it was completely out of character.
Yeah.
Totally out of character, but they've gone and
won it.
But it
worked that day.
Yeah.
Obviously, the thing that made national press was the shirts, the which was one of the questions in the. And I'll never forget when we were just about to kick off, because what happened was we go into the dressing room, go out to warm up. There was two shirts, and a training shirt. So some players put the top shirt on to warm up in. Some came in after and changed. So the second shirt didn't have Holston on it. The top shirt was the one that was your match shirt, which you should have just left until... Obviously, we come in, some took them off, some didn't train, warm up in them. They got started getting thrown into the skip, and the shirts were put on, the track suits were put on and zipped up. So no one actually noticed that six had and six didn't have Holston. Just as we were about to kick off, I remember Hod pointing at me, and I said, "Glenn, where's your Holston?" I didn't realise that Paul also was one of the players without the Holston. And Glenn Hoddle said to me, "Chesney," that was my nickname, "Chesney, don't worry about the shirts, the Holston. We'll have a beer afterwards when we win." That's what he said to me as we kicked off. Obviously, later it transpired. But if anybody in the world have thought of the best advertising ploy, it made front page news around the world.
Yeah.
Absolutely incredible. Amazing. Yeah.
We've had Mike Rollo on the show talking about it as well. And
yeah, I mean, but
that's the only thing I can remember about that cup final.
Yeah, it's the only
thing I want to remember about that cup final.
Well, but a lot of people did get, they got hauled over the coals, didn't they, by the chairman and by that. I mean, David Pleat had to go in the next day after they just left the cup final. Mike Rollo, they all got ferociously bollocked for it, that's for sure. I think one or two people might have got fired.
Well, the buses came back from Wembley. There was obviously team bus, there was staff bus, there was Holston officials. We had a marquee on the centre of White Hart Lane, and they refused to take their seats to Holston
because they were so angry about it.
Because they said we were in breach of contract. Wow.
Willie, you DJed. You had to DJ that party, I believe. Peter Day lost his job.
That's right.
That's it. Peter Day, the club secretary, was fired over that. He's just reminded us, which is seems a bit. I mean, it's just one of those things, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it was a total accident. It wasn't meant to happen. Yeah.
I mean, Clive, you obviously got that aside, the goal scoring record, the two Player of the Year awards as well. The one from your fellow professionals, I assume, is the one that means most to a footballer than football writers. Would you trade those three accolades in for a cup winner's medal?
Absolutely. I remember the Sports Writers Footballer of the Year award is on the Thursday before the cup final.
Oh, okay.
And I sat on the top table with David Pleat. You'd sit with your manager. And as it was announced and I was awarded a trophy, I turned to David because the year before, Gary Lineker had won it for Everton and Everton had lost in the cup final. Oh. And I remember saying to David, "Well, I hope what happened to Lineker doesn't happen to us on Saturday." This was on the Thursday night. And again, David just went, "Don't worry about it. We'll be fine. We'll be okay." So things that stick in your mind. But the PFA Award, there's no doubt for me that the PFA Award was the most prestigious award to be voted by your fellow peers. And the first time I actually thought about that, we played Norwich on the Saturday at home, White Hart Lane, the day before the award ceremony was on the Sunday. And there was a number of Norwich players and a lot of Spurs supporters remember him, Ian Crook, Ian Culverhouse, John Paulson. They were all playing for Norwich that day. And I honestly had three touches, scored three goals. And as I picked the ball up, having scored the third goal, I was jogging back to the halfway line and Ian Crook looked at me and said, "You're a lucky bastard." So I went, and obviously knowing him, I said, "Crookie," I said, "That's what I do. That's my job. I have to score goals." He said, "No." He said, "And you're going to win the PFA Award tomorrow night because we all voted for you." And I went, and I looked and I went, "What are you talking about?" And he went, "You're going to win it tomorrow." He said, "And you're still a lucky bastard." And that particular award, Glenn Hoddle, Chris Waddle was nominated as well in the six players, and I think just emphasised the season that the team had had.
Yeah, what a great side it was, because they, won nothing, sadly, as we all know, and yet They were the outstanding team, I think. That's what we all thought. Yeah. We were the outstanding team, certainly, to watch the brand of football and just the personnel. You look at that team. That is like, you know, just occasionally you get a Tottenham team and you think, wow, we've got a top player, 1 to 11, as it would have been then. We've got 11 top players, each in every position. And that team was that, wasn't it? It really
was. That team beat Liverpool home and away. We beat Everton at home. We lost, I think, because it was leading up to the cup final. I think that the squad was, because he was preserving a lot of the players for the game against Coventry.
Everton.
Yeah, sorry.
Pleaty rested me against Everton. Rested me? What's he talking about, rested me?
He
said, you're not going to Goodison. It was a midweek game.
That's right.
He said, we've got the cup final coming up. He said, I don't want to take a risk. You're not travelling. And I was on 47 goals at that point. I said to him, boss, you've gone mad. He went, no. And I didn't travel.
And you always scored at Everton.
I loved Everton. Goodison. Yeah.
So Nico Claassen played. Because that was the other thing. Nico Claassen was a useful player. Obviously,
Nico
Claassen
played
in.
And Sean Close made his debut.
Sean Close.
At Everton. We lost 1-0 and we ended up third that season,
But the amount of games that I can remember and the top teams that we played where we beat 3-4-0.
Yeah.
West Ham that Clive mentioned.
Yeah.
We did the same with Manchester United in the
Leicester 5-0 was another one.
Yeah, all top teams that we just outplayed, outscored.
Yeah,
so it was quite sad when you look back and reflect that we only came third that season, and there's nothing to actually show because it was a great period for the club, for the team, and Clive and I to be part of that was something special as well.
Yeah, well, let's go to a very very quick break for the sake of the podcast. Back in 1 minute. And we're back from the break. We're here live at Dingle's with Clive and Paul Allen. Don't forget, for extra daily reports, go to patreon.com/spursshow. Follow us on social media. Get your Spurs Show season tickets, season.spursshow.net. Come to these events. We do these events every single month. We've got Terry Naylor coming up next month in January. February to be confirmed. In March, we'll talk about him in a minute. Paul Gascoigne joins us in March. Chuckling away on his name.
He's got all the stories on Gaza.
Paul's got the stories about Gaza. Go to season.spursshow.net. We mentioned at the top of the show Terry Venables because obviously the controversy, the revelations about David Pleat happened in October. We went on a terrible winless run that following season when all that was going on. And then obviously Terry came in. Well, you mentioned before, you obviously knew extremely well. And you'd obviously already moved on and had this awful time in France as well at the same time. How did that happen? Surely with Venables coming, you knew him. Did you assume you were going to stay on and here we go again? What happened?
It was a really interesting time because I was going out of contract and obviously there wasn't freedom of contract as such at that time. So I'd come into the end of a four-year contract that I'd had with the club. Terry had arrived, come back from Barcelona. We sat down and spoke. It was probably a couple of months before the end of that season and he asked me what my plans were and I said, I've an ambition to play abroad. I'd love to experience playing abroad. And he actually sat there and said to me, well, what can I say? He said, I've just been in Barcelona for 3 years. Most amazing experience. He said, I'm not telling you not to do it. We'd like you to stay, but I understand. I think there was a lot of other things going on at the time. I think the club had already lined up Gary Lineker because of Terry's connection with him from Barcelona. So they were prepared to let me go. And therefore, they then saw it. The best way to do that was to actually sell me before my contract ran out, which they did by selling me to Bordeaux in France.
So. What did you know about Bordeaux? French football wasn't as well known as it is now.
I spoke to a so-called French expert who said to me, "You know, you're going to the Liverpool of France, don't you? They win the league, they win the cup, they win the double every year." And they were a powerhouse in French football at that time. Jean Tigana was the captain. Ami Jacquet was the coach, who obviously later went on to take France to the World Cup. I'm glad I had the experience. I didn't want to end my career and in later life think, oh, you know, I just wonder what that might have been.
Did you have any kids? How old were you at this stage?
Just our eldest son, Ollie, was 18 months old.
Okay, so still
it was
young,
it was
then.
An age. It was the right time to actually. To do that, so we went to France for a year, and then a year later I was back in England, in Manchester of all places. Yeah. So, you know, you're never going to leave. I was never going to leave London, and all of a sudden I've been in France and went to.
But the chairman had a thing in France. I don't know, he was making money on the side. There was a huge churn of players at Bordeaux. And you were there, and all of a sudden...
Claude Bez, the president at the time, over a 10-year period, was basically siphoning money out of every transfer. So he eventually got caught by the powers that be in France and went to prison, along with Bernard Tapie, who was at Marseille, where Chrissy Waddle went to play. Mm. So, yeah... I don't think it's unjust if I say that French football was a little corrupt
at the time. Definitely, allegedly,
yeah. Yes.
But yeah. Just, I'm interested. You know, that brilliant David Pleat team, and the following season, it fell apart so quickly. Leaving aside David's problems, that you know, but he was stitched up by all accounts. But leaving that aside. Were you surprised at how quickly that brilliant team didn't... I mean, we talked earlier about we've lost at the moment to injury, Van de Ven and Madison. That summer we lost Glenn Hoddle and Richard Gough left early in the following season. Do you think that was the main reason why it all...
I think they're certainly two players that were going to be very difficult to replace, I think. So we brought in Johnny Methood, I remember, to kind of replace Glenn, that probably took... A while. Well, I don't know if he really did settle at Spurs.
And it's an impossible task.
As a player. And we got off to not a particularly good start. Just didn't feel the style of football, the way that we played. It wasn't, as I say, as rewarding and as entertaining as it had been the previous season.
Because it's the same,
the season before. Yeah.
Same manager.
What you've done and not won the cup final. There must be a hangover after that season.
I think the nice thing about that is that you're back pre-season and you want to kind of make amends for the cup final, and you want to get playing again and you want to play competitive games. But for some reason it just didn't, I don't know, we had a kind of a reasonable start but not a great start. And then after David left, when Terry came, there was quite a long period before Terry actually came in and managed. So we had like a committee, actually, I think, Clive, that was picking the team. So that kind of, I think players being players wanted a manager. They wanted somebody there.
Focus.
That was going to... Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that kind of didn't help the progression of that season.
Yeah.
But that first Venables season, it looked like you had been moved on. You there was talk about moved on. I remember the official club photo, you weren't in it. And then there was, I don't know what that reason was, and I heard you sort of dug your heels in. And I remember the first game against Luton that season, the fans were chanting your name, you had a good game, and everyone's going, are you watching Venables? Because it looked like they were trying to move you on. What was your memory of that time? What was the sort of truth behind
it? I thought the same. I thought that it was probably my spell at the club was coming to an end, although I had still contractually, I still had years left on my contract. But it was a club that I still wanted to test myself. I still wanted to be a Spurs player. I went and spoke to Millwall. That was their first season then in League One, as it was. But I came back and decided, no, I was going to stay. I wanted to compete for some position within the club. And probably unlucky for Naeem, but lucky for me, he got injured pre-season. So that's why I played against Luton. But there was still... the kind of talk of me being moved on. I think it probably took a kind of a year for me as a player to probably convince Terry that I was part of his plans moving forward and I was going to be perhaps one of his signings, to speak.
What's that like? You must take a great deal of determination and strength of character to say, no, I'm not going to move, I'm not going to be moved, I'm going to stay here and I'm going to keep going until he has no alternative. Because he's obviously decided at some point that you're not in his first team plans. And you basically, that is a hard thing to do.
Yeah, I had spells where I was playing in the reserves, so it was a tough time. But I think that's probably something that, as a player, that I've always responded well to that challenge.
Yeah.
I wanted to stay. I wanted to be a part of it. So it's just a case of me applying myself, being professional, and hopefully that might reflect or might make an impression on Terry and be part of the club's plans moving forward. That's all I could really do.
And that's exactly what happened ultimately, right? You got right back in and because of that, because he saw maybe that quality that you're talking about was the thing, yeah, that he most...
I think he thought he saw that desire, that, yeah, that kind of enthusiasm, that drive. And I think whatever he thought that he wanted me in and around that moving forward.
Yeah.
So it was, I ended up signing another contract. So it worked out well, but it was a difficult, probably 2 years.
Yeah.
It was, yeah.
There was a lot of new players. You mentioned Lineker came in, Naeem came in, Gascoigne, Eric Torsvet, Steve Sedgley, Pat Vandenhauer, some big characters there.
Yeah.
What was Vandenhauer like? On and off the pitch.
He was nutty. I played with him at Millwall. He was crazy.
Yeah. he didn't really say a lot.
He was very quiet.
He didn't really kind of interact or integrate with anybody. He was, he did his talking on the pitch once or twice where he had, I suppose the best word is, went on benders and we didn't see him for periods of time. But again, the manager managed that particularly well. He was a fantastic player, Pat. But, he was, I would say very introvert, very quiet.
Yeah, yeah. And that all the more scary for that, right? No one really knew
him. I always remember that he used to sit down the front of the bus and he used to sit with his arm folded like that. And if we'd won on the way home and someone started throwing things at him and then it all start talking like that as if it wasn't, and he'd look round and he'd give that Pat Vandenhauer stare. Yeah. But they still continued. That was a tough group. That was a tough dressing room, and I fear for that must have been very difficult or challenging for any manager to come in and manage that group of players. It was a good group, but it was a difficult group.
Right.
Nice lads.
Who else was difficult then to manage?
Well, they were professional, trained, but there was just some real, I suppose the best word you could describe it is some real characters in that team. So you had Gascoigne, you had Walsh, you had Sedgley, you had Paul Stewart.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Potentially combustible people.
Well, yeah. Probably the banter could have gone perhaps to the extreme on occasions.
Right.
Well, testing the manager at times,
Well, Gascoigne was obviously famous for it. There's, the stories. We've had Eric Torsvet on the show, who I think some of the players used to take the piss out of what he used to wear. And Gascoigne used to always cut his socks. And there was a lot of stuff going on. But you've got to be a coward to take it, because if you're shrinking violet, it's quite...
I can remember Goodney Bergerson, who was a lovely lad and a really sensible lad. And I can remember him coming into the porter cabin where the treatment room was at that particular time. And he made the fatal of mistake of saying that he leaves his keys in the car. And I could see people looking. So he came back after training. He couldn't find his car. His car was around Mill Hill somewhere, and everybody had obviously driven off. Yeah, it was cruel in that way. Yeah, yeah. Very cruel. Yeah.
That's the end of part one for Clive and Paul Allen, our special Christmas show. Join us again when we return with part two from Clive and Paul Allen, giving us more great stories of their time at Tottenham Hotspur. See you soon. If you want to advertise on or sponsor this show, check us out at playbackmedia.co.uk.
Sports Social Podcast Network.